the Moan Broadcast Center. This is Take Two. Me, Martinez. The day LA was hoping to avoid is here as teachers all over the city are on strike. We'll hear from different parts of the district and also find out how today's rain is factoring in. Plus, we'll check in with Mayor Eric Garcetti on how he hopes to help bring both sides together on a deal and also go back 30 years to the last time LA teachers went on strike. What's changed? What's stayed the same? It's all ahead on Take Two.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Pepperdine's Graduate School of Education and Psychology, offering an evening master's in clinical psychology program with an MFT. Priority deadline to apply is January 21st at gsep.pepperdine.edu.
From 89.3 KPCC, this is Take Two. I'm Martinez. It's only Monday, and boy, do we have a lot to get to today already with all that rain coming down and an FBI investigation into downtown real estate development. We're going to start, though, with the biggest news hitting the streets of L.A. today.
We are the beaches!
We are the beaches!
This morning, some 30,000 teachers, counselors, nurses, and librarians who work in the LA Unified School District are officially on strike. Emily Henderson is one of a handful of KPCC reporters visiting LA schools today, talking to parents and striking educators.
I'm here outside Bethune Middle School, where the rain has finally let up a little bit, but the terrible weather this morning has not stopped teachers who are here on the picket lines on strike. They've got their umbrellas in their hands as well as their signs that say they are on strike for their students. I was told by teachers this morning that this isn't just about pay raises, it's also about reducing class sizes and getting more resources for students like psychologists and different educators to help them learn more in class. There's been plenty of chanting out here on the picket lines, and as cars have driven by, they've honked in support of the teachers. I have seen quite a few kids going to school this morning, but there's also a charter located at this middle school that isn't on strike, so it's hard to say whether those kids are going to the charter school or going to Bethune.
That's the news from Bethune Middle School in Los Angeles. Picket lines have formed at about 900 schools throughout the district. We'll check in on different campuses throughout today's show. First, though, to the ongoing negotiations between the union representing the teachers, United Teachers Los Angeles, and school district officials. The LA Unified School District made a new offer Friday that the union rejected. For more, we've got KPCC education reporter Kyle Stokes on the line. He's currently at Daniel Webster Middle School in West Los Angeles. Kyle, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, today seems like it's all about getting that strike up and running. Can we expect any kind of talks between the union and the district today?
Not today, for sure. The union said that on Friday when they walked out of negotiations with the district and rejected the most recent offer from LAUSD. They said, basically, we're going to be too busy. And you know, they do have a lot going on today. There's a big rally going on downtown near City Hall. And the two presidents of the two largest national teachers unions, the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association, of which UTLA is kind of a member of both, they are both in town today. And so those activities are going to take up most of the day. There's not going to be any more substantive talks between the two sides today.
Any chance of this happening later in the week or any ETA on when it might happen?
Yeah, I would love to know. I was talking with Superintendent Austin Buettner this weekend. I was wondering if anything came together this weekend. Was the district maybe going to revise its offer? But I think that there has been a lot of concern that this was sort of a foregone conclusion for months now, that this was where we were headed without any ability to turn back. And I think there was, at least on Sunday in short-term thinking, there was not much that the district felt they were going to be able to do this weekend to head this off.
We're talking to KPCC education reporter Kyle Stokes. The union wants a 6.5% pay raise for its teachers. The big emphasis has been on reducing class size, too. And we know that on Friday, the district upped its offer to decrease class size by hiring more teachers, librarians, and counselors. But the union rejected it. Kyle, what's the remaining sticking point here?
Well, there's a lot of remaining sticking points around class size. The first is really this section of the contract that essentially acts as a safety valve. Class size reduction is a costly proposition because you got to hire more teachers or at least bring more teachers into the classroom in order to reduce the number of students in them. And so in order to save money, the district has this provision in the cost that says if they're ever in financial distress, they can raise class sizes from whatever's been spelled out in the contract. And the district has been in financial distress for a long time. As a result, there's this sort of what the union considers a very toxic provision in the contract that they just want gone. They don't think that the district should have this kind of flexibility. But the other, you know, on the other hand, the district says that, you know, we cannot bargain, you know, they're willing to get rid of it. They just want to have, you know, something that comes in to replace it to let them have certain conditions that recognize, okay, if there's a crisis, a financial crisis, we need to be able to increase class sizes. And the district has come forward with discrete, you know, one-time money to at least for 1 year reduce class sizes by a couple of students, depending on the grade and depending on the school. But the union says that doesn't matter after this year because the district can then, if you don't get rid of this sort of safety valve provision. So it's a complicated issue. As you know, you can see this thing kind of layers on top of itself, and both of those layers interact with each other, and you can't address one without addressing the other. And both sides are far apart on both of those layers. So there's a, I mean, it's, this is, there's been almost no progress on this issue, at least since October when the district offered to get rid of this provision. And it's been just stuck for a long time.
Yeah, far apart in those layers, but not that far apart, it seems like, on a big issue. Anytime there's a labor dispute, the headline always is about salaries, about salary of each side here. And it seems like in this respect, right, the union and the district are not that far apart.
Yeah, no, they're not that far apart. I mean, 6% raise is what the district is offering with back pay to 2017. The union is looking for a 6.5% raise, but with back pay all the way back to 2016. And so there is a little bit of daylight between the two on the issue. I think that the fact that we're still talking about these vexing issues like class sizes, that's a motivating issue for a lot of teachers out here. I'm talking to teachers at Daniel Webster Middle School this morning, and you know, a lot of them mentioned nurses. They're really concerned about the fact that they only have a nurse on campus here a couple of days a week. One teacher I was talking to said that she had to deal with a student who had an asthma attack. It looked like it was a pretty scary experience for this teacher as well as for this student. And if there's not a nurse on campus to handle that, that's a safety issue for students. And so, you know, when you sort of get down into the weeds with the teachers and you ask them, like, okay, so what if we gave up the salary increase for you know, like, you know, some of these other issues, like class size reduction or adding a nurse. That was a suggestion that Superintendent Austin Buettner had. I don't think they're ready to go that far. But it also goes to show you that there are other motivating issues for teachers other than just salary out here. And I think that just because they're relatively close on salary doesn't mean that other issues aren't reasons for them to go on strike.
Now, we should add that LA County on Friday also offered to kick in some funds to pay for mental health providers. The Board of Supervisors is expected to vote on that on Tuesday. What more can you tell us about that?
Yeah, mental health providers, meaning nurses. I mean, essentially, you know, it's a little bit confusing because it is mental health funding, but, you know, it's possible that the person who would be funded with these dollars, the person who would be the employee of the school district that would be funded with these county dollars would actually be a nurse that would also provide mental health services. So the effect of that money would be to ensure that a nurse would be on campus on LAUSD elementary schools, every elementary school for 5 days a week. Now, that's a big deal. The union wonders how the math works out on that. They're wondering how $10 million pays for enough nurses to close the gap of elementary schools that don't have nurses on campus 5 days a week. So remains to be seen on that one, whether or not this is you know, going to be the thing that solves the issue. It's certainly a lot of progress toward meeting a union demand, but it still only partially meets it because the union wants a nurse on campus at every LAUSD campus full time.
Hey, Kyle, really briefly, how long is this expected to take? I mean, what should people prepare for?
Yeah, you want to take some bets, A? Yeah. I have no idea how long this is going to take. I think that it's at least going to last for a couple of days. I think, you know, in 1989, they struck for 9 days. You know, so I don't know what to – I've talked to a lot of people like, hey, how long is this strike going to take? No one has an answer. You know, I your guess is as good as mine at this point. But it's going to take – it's going to – this is – I would buckle in, A. That's all I'll say on that.
It's KPCC's Kyle Stokes catching us up on the latest with the teacher strike in Los Angeles. We'll continue to check in with him throughout the day. Kyle, thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem.
LA's teachers aren't just battling the school district today. They're also struggling with the weather. A series of SoCal storms will be dropping a ton of rain this week. Already, the National Weather Service has issued flood advisory warnings for most of Ventura and Los Angeles counties. And officials are advising travelers to be prepared for road closures as flooding and rockslides are a real possibility. Fire-affected areas are most at risk. And for an update on conditions and evacuations, we have Pono Barnes with the LA County Fire Department. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Now, how has LA County Fire been prepping for this week's storms?
So the prep for this storm began back following the Woolsey Fire itself. The Woolsey Fire burn area was affected pretty good by the fire itself, and we've been preparing our residents in the area for the potential for mud and debris flow this winter.
And is that the most vulnerable area right now, Woolsey?
Definitely. The Woolsey Fire burn scar and those areas adjacent to those drainages and any residents along those steep slopes.
What kind of prep has been going on for this?
So leading up to these rain events, we've been providing residents with sandbags and information on how to prepare their homes for the significant rainfall.
What kind of things are you telling people?
How to properly sheet water off of their properties and protect their residents, as well as having them create a plan for the potential of mud and debris flow, any hazards that may occur as a result of the rain. It's super important that residents in the area have a plan, create an evacuation plan, and be sure to identify primary exit routes as well as secondary exit routes, and ensuring your vehicle is ready to go.
Now, you mentioned the evacuation plan, to have an evacuation plan. What determines what areas get evacuated and what will happen for them to be evacuated?
Yeah, so there are definitely certain areas that are that pose a definitely more threat than others. There are anywhere where you're along a steep hillside, or if you're at the low-lying area, anywhere where you're sitting below one of those drainages in the Malibu area.
Talking to Pono Barnes with the L.A. County Fire Department. How is the L.A. County Fire Department reaching out to at-risk residents? Are you providing them with any resources at all, any resources beyond sandbags and information?
Yeah, so we're in unified command with Public Works and the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. And the Los Angeles County Office of Emergency Management has provided some really great information for residents in the Woolsey Fire area and residents in Malibu as just a whole. Sandbags, as well as information on how to and pack your go kit and be ready to evacuate should an order be released. And this is super important. You should have 7 to 10 days worth of supplies for you and your family. That's food, water, medications, and also be sure to not forget your pets.
What about netting to maybe catch some of that debris? How much is that? Are you guys talking to residents about that?
Netting hasn't been on the list of things. We're more looking at diverting water and trying to sheet that water down hillsides. The affected area has lost its absorption factor. So we're trying to get people to prepare their homes and divert that water as best they can.
You know, last week marked the one-year anniversary of the mudslide in Montecito. Do you expect this week's rains to kind of be similar to those conditions that we saw a year ago?
We're hoping not, but we're definitely planning for the worst. We got our residents pretty well informed. We urge our residents to stay informed by tuning in to local media coverage and following us on social media for the latest as far as conditions go.
Is there anything that was learned from a year ago that could help the department prepare for places such as Malibu, places that could be very, very much affected?
Absolutely. Our unified command has a very targeted and specific messaging. We want to make sure that there's no confusion. If there is an evacuation order that is released, we urge residents to heed those warnings and evacuate immediately should the time arise.
All right, that's Pono Barnes. He's with the L.A. County Fire Department. He's been monitoring the flood advisory warnings for Ventura and L.A. counties. Pono, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We also have an update for Riverside County. Cal Fire has issued a mandatory evacuation order for areas affected by the Holy Fire. If you live in the Riverside area, please visit the website rivcoready.org. That's RIVCOready.org for a complete list of areas that might go right now. Maps are available to determine which zone you live in and the status of that zone. Good luck. Be safe out there.
Southern California, the home of Hollywood, Dodgers, Disneyland. Sometimes it feels like paradise. But any second now, that could change. Because a big earthquake is coming.
This will happen. There's no likelihood of it not happening. We are not stopping plate tectonics.
When the earthquake hits, our world will be shaken. So what can you do to prepare? I'm Jacob Margolis, host of KPCC's new podcast, The Big One, your survival guide. Listen in Apple Podcasts.
Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I mean Martinez. It's the first day of the strike for teachers in the LA Unified School District, the largest school district in the state. Picket lines have formed at about 900 schools across the city. Teachers are asking for higher salary and a reduction in class size. Take 2's Emily Henderson was at Bethune Middle School near Huntington Park.
I don't think we should budge on class size, or I don't think we should budge on pay raise, because it's way overdue.
You know, we need nurses, we need librarians, we need more counselors. So we're here for our parents and our students.
We are doing something for our students. We are doing something for the community. We want to improve our schools. We want our schools to be fully funded. That's the simple thing we're asking for.
That was Grady Mackey, a resource specialist, Mustaine Mabub, an eighth-grade counselor, and Paul Nyoge teaches special education. They're all educators at Bethune Middle School. Now KPCC's Emily Dugdale is near Hollenbeck Middle School in Boyle Heights. She's been speaking to teachers and parents. Hello, Emily.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. Now, you've heard from people on both sides of the strike this morning. First, just describe for me what the scene is like. It's rainy, it's cold. What have you been seeing?
Yeah, the rain has really been coming down this morning, but that's all the more surprising that there is such a strong force of teachers and parents out here. Everyone's kind of huddled under umbrellas, but, you know, a lot of the teachers are out here wearing their bright red union shirts. They're chanting, they're marching in picket lines, and they made quite a commotion this morning. A lot of parents were driving by and honking the horns at the teachers as they went by. So it's a lot of excitement and energy, and the teachers say that, you know, this is what they had hoped for, was to bring this energy out here this morning.
And do they seem like, even despite all the rain that we're getting today and even probably into the rest of the week, that the enthusiasm and energy and stamina will remain if this strike continues?
You know, I think yes, and I think it's because these teachers feel so passionately about their children, about their education. I talked to a lot of these teachers, and they said, you know, class sizes at this school can range from 30 to 40 kids in the classroom. I had one math teacher tell me, you know, math, middle school math is tough. She needs her kids to be engaged. She needs to be able to give each kid attention, and she's struggling with that. And that's a huge reason why this teacher is out there on the picket line today, and why a lot of these teachers are.
Now, Emily, I know there are some parents on the picket line, too. Why have they come out?
Yes, that's a great question. There's a lot of parents here. And they're coming out because they support the teachers. A lot of them, the parents that have spoken to me, say, you know, I support my child's education. I want my child's education to be good. I talked to the mother of a high school parent today. You know, this mother's a Spanish-speaking parent, doesn't speak a lot of English, but is out here with all these, you know, chanting with these teachers because she wants to show up for her daughter, and her daughter is right there next to her. You know, she's not crossing the picket line today. She wanted to show support.
What about the parents who are just dropping their kids off for school? How are they reacting to the scene there?
So there's a mixed reactions. There are some parents who have dropped off their kids and said, you know, I support the teachers, and they've driven off from the curb instead of honking their horn, and then all the parents and teachers cheer. And then there's other parents that I've spoken to who are not that happy. They're not happy about the disruption to their children's education. They're worried about what their children are going to do all day. You know, right now the kids were walking into school earlier this morning, and the teachers were just saying, go into the auditorium, you know. So there wasn't a clear sense of what they were going to do today, and some of those parents are worried about that.
Well, because that was what I was going to ask you about, Emily, what the schedule is like for kids. But, I mean, it is day one, so maybe there is a lot of uncertainty over what the plan is for the kids if they're going to spend all day at school.
You know, that's a good question, and I haven't gotten clarity on exactly what the children are going to be doing today. I do know that this morning, you know, when the kids were walking in through that picket line, there were kind of administrators telling them to go to the auditorium. And so I believe at least for the morning, that was part of their plan.
All right, that's KPCC reporter Emily Dugdale. Emily, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Abe.
Staying with the teachers' strike, this is the first time in nearly 30 years that the LA School District union staff has walked out. Many still remember the 9-day teacher strike way back in 1989. KPCC's Callie Wells has this report.
It was a spring day in mid-May when more than 20,000 teachers walked out of school. At the time, Jamie Schwartz was a 10th grader at Taft High School in Woodland Hills. She said for her, it was a 2-week vacation.
Every day we went to first period, and then we left and went to the beach for 9 days.
For others, like Virginia Escamilla, skipping school wasn't just about playing hooky. She was a 9th grader at Eagle Rock and already had plans to go into education. So when the TV cameras showed up at school, she spoke out in support of her teachers.
I distinctly remember calling home from a public phone and telling my mom, just so you know, I walked out of school and I might show up on a Spanish television interview.
In 1989, charter schools and class sizes weren't the issue. Former UTLA President Wayne Johnson says more than anything, it was a strike for wages.
We ranked like 40th in teacher pay, and administrators ranked first in pay. And working conditions in Los Angeles at the time simply were not that good.
Gail Craven was a teacher at Colfax Elementary School in Valley Village. She still teaches there today. She says walking the line was surreal.
I remember the picket lines. I remember it being so, feeling so strange to be outside and see the kids walk into school.
Eileen Ramirez remembers bringing her 18-month-old daughter to the picket line.
I'd been with the district for 10 years. I was teaching ESL at North Hollywood High School. There was a lot of support, so I didn't have a lot of anxiety walking the line. And I brought my daughter, and I pushed her in a stroller.
After 9 days, negotiations ended with a 3-year contract and more than 20% in pay raises. Gail Craven says she felt like the strike accomplished something last time. Now she's getting ready to pick it again, but says for her, there's not the same light at the end of the tunnel.
I'm so frightened this time about how long it would take. It was a different time in my life, so I was okay being out for 9 days. Now I'm terrified, absolutely terrified.
As for Virginia Escamilla, the 9th grade activist from 1989, she's now a parent of 2 LAUSD students. She supports the strike, but she says this time, in the wake of the growing charter school movement, there's more to lose.
We are at a whole other level of our system being at risk. Right now, I think it's a bigger situation. It really is undermining what is accessible to all families right now.
And as a teacher, Craven says it's not just the issues that have changed. It's also the kids she's teaching and the world they're living in. She says she's been explaining to her fifth graders in detail about why she's striking. But in 1989, she told them far less. That's because 30 years ago, there was no social media, no conflicting facts, and much less opportunity for misinformation.
I'm more comfortable having very frank discussions about what's going on in the world with my students. You want the kids to really know the truth of what is happening.
She says she felt more optimistic in 89, but this time, it feels like the district and the union aren't willing to compromise. Or, she muses, maybe 30 years ago, she had more naive hope in the world. I'm Kaylee Wells.
Staying with Los Angeles, if you've driven anywhere near downtown LA over the past few years, you've probably noticed its skyline is changing. A lot of those changes are because of Chinese real estate developers. And now some of these companies and developments have been named in a federal search warrant related to alleged corruption at LA City Hall. Among the potential crimes under investigation, bribery and money laundering. KPCC's housing reporter Matt Tinoco has been following this story. He joins us now for the latest. Good morning, Matt.
Hi, A.
All right. The FBI has been looking into money coming into and out of City Hall. What can you tell us about the connection these Chinese-backed developments have to that investigation?
Yeah, so along with bribery and money laundering, the warrant is also seeking information relating to potential conspiracy, financial reporting evasion, extortion, and then potential kickbacks concerning federal funds. What's critical to emphasize right now is that no one has been arrested or charged related to this investigation. That is, though the search warrant names a lot of City Hall workers and building developers, we don't really know exactly who relates to who and how. But the big news here is that the FBI's investigation into corruption at LA City Hall is much more far-reaching than we've known until now.
Now, what buildings or developers are we talking about here?
I counted four in the search warrant. There's Oceanwide, which is a Beijing-based builder working on three towers across the street from the Staples Center. There's Greenland USA, which is based in Shanghai and is finishing the Metropolis Towers along the edge of the 110 freeway. Then there's also two others, Shenzhen New World and Shenzhen Hazens, who have filed plans to redevelop a hotel each along Figueroa Street in downtown LA. Hazens actually wants to build what would become the tallest building in LA if completed. A combination of a hotel, apartment, and condos.
Now, this FBI search warrant became news over the weekend. What exactly did it seek?
Yeah, so it's not a new search warrant. It was actually issued in July of last year and then executed by late November. It was unearthed on Twitter this weekend by Seamus Hughes over this weekend. Basically, it's a search warrant that asks to go through the Gmail account of a longtime city building and safety employee who also served as deputy mayor under Mayor Eric Garcetti from 2016 to 2017. It's just looking through that email account for information related to several city council offices, some city departments, and even a commission, particularly basically just trying to figure out what the relationship is between those offices, those council members, to those aforementioned development companies.
Now, we first learned of this investigation in early November. That was when federal agents executed a search at City Councilman Jose Huizar's home and offices. What do we know now about the scope? Is it limited to just Huizar? Because it sounds like it's growing and it's expanding.
Yeah, it's growing and expanding is where we are right now. It seems to be a relatively profound public corruption investigation into City Hall. We know that the FBI was investigating Jose Huizar and money laundering through his office and family and a private school. But the search warrant reveals that it's much larger than that and reaches much deeper into City Hall, different council members and commissions and departments. The reason the FBI is likely interested into this is because of it's foreign money and potentially even a state-owned company, and that's the sort of money that we don't want to have flowing through City Hall. That's probably what piqued the FBI's interest into this.
Now, where does this investigation go from here now?
It's hard to speculate. Again, this is just one search warrant. We don't know how many more there potentially have been. Or it's just really a waiting game. I mean, I know the list of potential charges are pretty serious, but nobody has been charged or arrested at this point right now. I'm sure we will be hearing more in coming months.
All right. KPCC's housing reporter, Matt Tinoco. Matt, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll continue our coverage of the LA teacher strike all throughout the day here on 89.3 KPCC. Well, one option for parents and kids during this strike is going to the movies. The film that sunk Aquaman and topped the box office this weekend was a bit of a surprise. Critics generally did not like it, and the star of the film has been going through the social media ringer for weeks now. Find out how he managed to win the weekend when Take Two continues.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Pepperdine's Graduate School of Education and Psychology, offering a master's in clinical psychology program with an MFT. Their flexible evening format has locations in West LA, Encino, and Irvine, and is designed for working professionals preparing graduates for licensure in both marriage and family therapy and professional clinical counseling. Classes start September. Apply by January 21st to be considered for a $4,000 scholarship opportunity at gsep.pepperdine.edu.
Back now with Take Two on 89.3 KPCC. I'm A. Martinez. Well, Hollywood can't get rid of Harvey Weinstein. He's back, at least sort of. Plus, former Disney chief creative officer John Lasseter, who left the company due to misconduct allegations, is now head of a rival animation studio. Let's go on the lot.
God is my witness.
Stick your head out and yell.
You want a chocolate?
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
The Hollywood Reporter's Rebecca Keegan is our guide as always. She's with us today via Skype. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi.
All right, so let's get into Harvey Weinstein. He is back, not in the way some might think or fear. A Weinstein Company film that was in limbo is now topping the box office.
Alexa, stop!
Why can't we listen to Aretha? Hmm? You want to feed your soul? Then listen to its queen. Think about it. Yeah. You better think about what you're trying to do to me. It's amazing, ain't it? I sound just like her.
Yeah. It's uncanny.
That's From the Upside, starring Bryan Cranston and Kevin Hart. Rebecca, tell us how this film got to be number one.
Well, The Upside is a remake of a French buddy comedy. The Weinstein Company had bought the rights to that film, made it, premiered it at the Toronto Film Festival in September of 2017 with an eye toward distributing this movie in March of 2018. Less than a month after the Toronto premiere of The Upside, the New York Times and the New Yorker stories about Harvey Weinstein landed, and any movies the company had ready to release were sort of cast into no man's land. Now, despite that tortured history, the movie made $19.6 million at the domestic box office this weekend, exceeding expectations. It was distributed by STX in partnership with the buyers of the Weinstein Company.
STX, so they're the ones that took over that the Weinstein studio.
No, they're the distributors. There's a company called Lantern Capital, which is a Dallas-based private equity firm, which bought Weinstein's assets for about $310 million. That includes a library of 270 movies that Weinstein's did release, like The King's Speech and Inglourious Basterds, as well as movies like The Upside, which were awaiting release.
Now, this is just one of a handful of unreleased films. What are the others that kind of are out there?
Well, The Current War is probably one of the most interesting ones. This is a movie that stars Benedict Cumberbatch as Thomas Edison. Many of us thought it was going to be a big awards contender when it was originally slated to come out in the fall of 2017. That movie has international distribution, but Lantern has not yet closed a deal for it domestically. There's another movie called Hotel Mumbai, starring Armie Hammer and Dev Patel, which is awaiting release. So there's some promising-sounding projects that have just been sitting and waiting.
And that's just what happens until something moves? They just sit in the shelf like that?
Kind of. I mean, it's interesting. Lantern's background is in handling distressed companies. They've never run a film studio. In the case of The Upside, they partnered with a distributor that sort of knows what they're doing, and that's STX, and clearly that worked out. Whether Lantern will go that route for its other films is unclear.
Wow, if I were an actor, Rebecca, whose movie is sitting on the shelf like that, it would drive me crazy. I don't know
sure,
what I would
or
do,
a
right?
Director.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brutal, and they really have no control over the fate of these projects that many of them worked pretty hard on.
Now, another Weinstein legacy film is stirring controversy. That's Green Book. That was meant to be a feel-good movie, but Rebecca, it's making people angry. What's happened with that movie?
Well, as far as I know, Harvey Weinstein had nothing to do with the making of Green Book. I think it's the award season controversy swirling around this movie that sort of remind people of a vintage Harvey Weinstein. This is the controversies we're hearing about the movie are sort of like what he used to do for rival movies. Having said that, Green Book really has people pretty riled up. Last week, there were a couple of new controversies that emerged. One of the screenwriters was caught agreeing with 9/11 conspiracies in an old tweet of his. The director, Peter Farrelly, admitted to flashing Cameron Diaz on set of an old movie. Earlier in this particular award season, one of the stars, Viggo Mortensen, said the N-word at a screening. And probably one of the central issues for the movie has been that the family of the character played by Mahershala Ali disputes the accuracy of the film.
Now, despite that long laundry list of concerns and also lukewarm reviews, the film it's just gaining steam when it comes to the awards front. I know Mahershala Ali has won some awards on it.
Yeah, he won a Golden Globe. The film won two other Golden Globes, including Best Picture for a musical or comedy. Yeah. Director Peter Farrelly is nominated for a DGA award. I should say that the voting for those awards preceded these most recent controversies, the one about the conspiracy theory tweet and Peter Farrelly exposing himself on set. So it'd be interesting to see if what happens today, which is Oscar voting, ends at 5 p.m., if Oscar voters are following these controversies and if they feel they're germane to the quality of the film.
All right, now let's move on to another powerful executive who left his job due to the Me Too movement, John Lasseter. He was chief creative officer at Disney, but now he has a new gig. What more can you tell us about his new gig?
Yeah, Lasseter is going to be heading up Skydance Animation, which is David Ellison's animation company, just getting off the ground. This is a company that has a distribution deal with Paramount and about 65 employees in L.A.
Skydance, and I love the name. I got it. I'm a sucker for,
it's a good name.
For cool names. Yeah, Skydance Animation. So what's it known for?
Well, nothing yet. They haven't released a movie. Interestingly, one of the movies that they have in development is helmed by two major female figures, creative figures in feature animation. Linda Wolverton, who's probably best known for writing The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast screenplays, also the female director of the first Shrek movie. So it's a difficult position for, I think, many women in animation to be in, being led by John Lasseter, who was sort of associated with the Me Too movement.
Yeah, then I can imagine the reaction to the animation community to all this has got to be a little weird, right?
Among people I've spoken with, it's very much falling along gender lines. I spoke to a lot of women in animation who said they will not go work at Skydance as long as John Lasseter is there. Similarly, I spoke to some men in animation who said they think that his sort of creative genius is such that they would be enticed to go work there. So it's dividing folks.
Then why is Lasseter the exception here? Because, you know, most men facing allegations of misconduct haven't really recovered from it. So why is he getting the opportunity?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at these men, a sort of scale of severity of allegations and impact that they had on their industries, Lasseter is probably the person with the least severe allegations. He was basically accused of hugging people too hard and making some inappropriate comments. When he stepped down, it was for quote unquote unspecified missteps. Not to say that these issues aren't serious, but compared to, say, Weinstein, who's on trial for rape, they're much lesser allegations. He also had a very profound impact on the animation industry, both creatively and financially.
Now, one more thing. The Oscars still doesn't have a host. It isn't the only high-profile show facing that dilemma. The Super Bowl has been having trouble recruiting halftime performers. What's going on with the Super Bowl?
Right. Well, you may have heard that folks like Rihanna, Adele, Jay-Z, Pink, and Cardi B had reportedly turned down the halftime slot in solidarity with former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick. The Super Bowl, as you say, like the Oscars, has had a little trouble recruiting marquee talent.
The NFL doesn't pay its halftime performers. They feel that that just the notoriety of being the halftime act is payment enough. That's why I think over the years it's been a little tough. But it is finalized now. The Super Bowl will have a halftime show. Who's going to be performing?
Right, Maroon 5, Travis Scott, and Big Boy will be the performers. And no disrespect to those folks, but compared to sort of Beyonce, Lady Gaga, Prince, some of the performers of years past, it doesn't feel like quite the sort of marquee value.
Yeah, typically the halftime show is what people watch it for in the commercial, so we'll find out how they do. All right, Rebecca Keegan is with The Hollywood Reporter. She joins us every Monday to talk about the business of Hollywood. Rebecca, thanks a lot.
Thanks, A.
As we continue our coverage of the first L.A. teacher strike in 30 years, we'll hear from someone who might have a lot to lose if this strike turns out to be a long one. Mayor Eric Garcetti is considering a run at the White House. Despite the Democratic field getting crowded, can he make that kind of announcement while a strike is happening? Plus, what, if anything, can he do to help both sides come to a deal? Mayor Garcetti coming up when Take Two continues in 60 seconds. Stay with us. Back now with Take Two on 89.3 KPCC. I'm A. Martinez. Today's teacher strike, not to mention the rain, has disrupted the usual flow of a Monday morning news in a lot of ways. More than 30,000 teachers, counselors, and librarians have walked off the job, and picket lines have formed at 900 schools in the district. Schools are open, staffed by administrators and substitutes, but many parents did not send their kids to classes today. For more on how the city's responding, we have L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti on the line. Mayor, welcome to Take Two.
Thank you. A happy rainy Monday.
Yeah, you too. You too. Now, this is, needless to say, a massive situation here. We're the largest school district in the state. Many students stayed home today. How has your office prepared the city for this? What services are you offering?
Well, we have all of our recreation and parks, our centers open with additional staff, places that parents can trust and that they know that are in their neighborhood where they can have their kids be safe today. So anybody listening, you can check those out. You can go to lamayor.org, and there's a link there. Our libraries will have extended hours and some staff as well for people to have after-school programs and during the day a supervision, and our family resource center. So we have a capacity taken about 15 to 20,000 of LA kids. We also have deployed serious police resources to make sure that our children are safe. We were given the assignment of all 369 elementary schools. We have 100% coverage there without taking away from any of our patrols in the city for other crime, but we've had to pull some of our investigative resources, detectives and others who are there, to ensure everybody's safety while we, you know, make sure that we push both sides to get to a resolution sooner than later on this strike.
How long have you budgeted for this to last, these resources?
We can keep doing this, and we will do it as long as it takes, but it comes at a price, obviously, of some overtime for our rec and park staff and for our police officers. While we're not using overtime or taking patrol officers away, because that's critical, it does take, not on our serious investigations, murders, or crimes of violence, but for property crimes and others, there will be less follow-up. There will be, not as quick callbacks and things like that in the days where we have to put those resources into ensuring the safety of our children.
Now, we've heard that a lot of parents didn't feel like they knew what was going on, especially those who don't speak English as their primary language. How have you communicated to families in what's available for them today?
Yes, that was breathtaking to me that so many families didn't even know. And so I've been speaking in Spanish and in English to make sure that, we've been pushing out through social media, through interviews and others, letting folks know that the city is available here, the schools are open as well, and that their kids will be safe. I mean, to be a parent right now, I think many parents are very sympathetic with teachers and their demands, as I think most of us are, to have smaller class sizes and the right support staff. Those are righteous fights. But the logistics of a day are complicated for any parent where the kids will get fed, making sure that they're safe. They don't have to take a day off of work and maybe lose that job. So I think it's in the interest of everybody, and I've been working extremely hard. You know, last call was close to midnight last night, first call this morning, and for days and weeks to really get movement, because the quickest way to end this is to end this. And last week, even though it might have ended with a walk away from negotiations, was the first time they really sat down face-to-face, something that's staggering to me as somebody who's done a lot of labor negotiations, that there was so little communication, not just with sometimes the parents, but also face-to-face with the two parties. I'm very optimistic that not a lot separates them, but there are some real issues that need to be addressed, and I hope they can get back to the table as soon as possible. That means this week, in the early part of the week.
Now, I'm wondering how you will be able to help that. I know as mayor you don't have authority over the schools, but you have offered help with negotiations. Have you been able to weigh in at all on this?
Absolutely. I've been in regular contact with Alex Caputo Pearl and the other leaders of the union, and with Superintendent Austin Buettner and members of the school board. I've encouraged both last week to get to the table to make material offers and to do it face-to-face with senior representatives. That happened, and I think we played a role in making sure that would. We've also said these issues aren't just ones that are in a vacuum. If we want to see more counselors on our schools, we should be looking at the nonprofit sector, our city resources for job training. Since I've been mayor, we've made community college free, and we've more than tripled the number of summer jobs and during the year jobs for students. So we can all step up and help. But we, you know, I talked to the governor just about 20 minutes ago and asked for his assistance and his budget. So if we embrace the schools together, I'm confident we can get a deal done. But that has to be done at the table.
But ultimately, you won't be able to actually have power over these negotiations to do anything. I mean, I'm wondering if that's frustrating to you as the mayor of the city.
No, you know, obviously, I think there's cities where it's a little bit more coherent, and mayors do have that direct control. But I've always known with negotiations, it comes from two sides trusting one another. Remember when we almost had the port strike a few years ago? While I didn't have as many formal powers, I got together with President Obama's Secretary of Labor, and at a time when the economy for the entire country would have gone off a cliff, we were able to get into a room, get people together, get them to trust one another, and I helped settle that. I've done that with two or three other things where I don't always have formal power, but it's really not about somebody forcing folks to do it. You have to want to, and you have to have that trust, and you have to use some generosity on both sides.
Wondering, since you just spoke to the governor, what you asked him to do?
Well, first of all, it's wonderful to have a governor who has been a mayor and who understands these issues, whether it was the priority he's put on homeless dollars that we've asked for many years. I'm so excited to have Governor Newsom, who gets these issues and knows it. He's been well briefed, and his budget folks have been engaged with both the union and with the district. I think there's monies from the state.
Are you asking him for money?
Yes, the early education dollars that he put into his budget, I think that can go a long way to addressing some of the concerns to make sure we have teachers for our youngest kids. Health care is a priority, and I said, please look at whether or not schools can have nurses. You know, kids live in schools, and it's the place where usually their mental or physical or dental impairments go undiagnosed, and they can be a great, great way to get kids to stay in school and graduate. Also, Prop 63 he brought up, and he thinks there's some mental health dollars that can be used in the schools. So there's no question that the state will be a big part of this, and also help us with the conversation, which has been very, you know, intense about charter schools and new schools. So I think that the state will be able to help put a process forward on having that conversation and bring some dollars for early ed, potentially for health and mental health in schools.
Now, Mayor Garcetti, as we know, you are mulling a run for president of the United States, and I think many of us are expecting you to make that decision very soon. Can you do that while a strike is happening in your city?
You know, I'm totally focused on the strike, and absolutely, I mean, I can walk and chew gum at the same time, but my focus is not on my future right now. It's on the kids in this city.
So we won't get an announcement one way or another until the strike is over.
Absolutely not. And that's, you know, my first priority is making sure that kids are safe, that our schools are open, that teachers and kids can return to the classroom where they need to be.
But are you going to jump into this race? The Democratic pool is getting crowded and crowded as we go.
It is, and it's exciting to see. I mean, I'll say this, like most Americans, you know, I'm as frustrated by the direction of this country as anybody. I hate seeing this country divided. I hate seeing immigrants scapegoated. I hate seeing that cities around this country don't have the support they need from Washington, D.C. Whether I run or not, I've said it's, I think, a great time for a mayor to run to show that, you know, in Washington, where people get partisan and get nothing done and tweet, we're actually on the street, you know, fixing tough problems from the schools, as you see here today, and actually in the dirty work of that, or ending homelessness, or building out infrastructure and creating jobs. So, you know, it's still something that's going to be I'll mull over, talk to my
mayor. I got to ask you one more thing, one more story that we'd like to talk to you about. We heard earlier from KPCC's Matt Tinoco about a federal investigation looking into possible bribery and extortion with some real estate developments downtown, casting a pretty wide net. And we already know that Councilman Jose Huizar's office is raided in the fall. Not been charged with anything, nor has anyone else, but has the FBI contacted you about this?
Only to give us a heads up that the raid was going to happen on the council member's office. But, you know, as a son of a prosecutor, I'll say this. It doesn't matter who you are or what your title is. City employees need to be held to the highest ethical standards. And my expectation is that anybody asked will help the FBI with this investigation and support them. Angelenos deserve, you know, public servants who bring integrity to what they do inside and outside City Hall. And that will be always my demand of anyone who serves.
Yeah, because according to the warrants filed, suspicions allegations of corruption go back a few years. How aware have you been of these investigations?
None. I'm not privy to any of the details of the FBI's investigation. You know, it troubled me to see. I hope that they get to the bottom, root it out, and punish anybody who is responsible. The public trust is the most important thing that we have. I won't tolerate it. I know they won't, and I hope they get to the bottom of it.
All right. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
All right, that's going to do it for Take Two. We will be back tomorrow morning at 9. You can find us on Twitter at Take Two. That's at Take Two. You can find me Twitter and Instagram, same address, at AMartinezLA. That's at AMartinezLA. We'll be covering the teacher strike all day long here on KPCC. Up next, Air Talk with Larry Mantle.